Merry Christmas, everyone. Ho, ho, ho. That was my Santa impression. You are listening. Thank you. This is the end credits movie show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
I'm Candace Lepage.
I'm Tim Phillips.
It's a three-micer today.
Woo!
I mean, it's what we usually do at the end of the every year, but thanks for being here on Christmas Day. Your dedication to our radio program, our community radio program, is really appreciated. You would come in at 2 o'clock on Christmas Day.
It's true. Oh, thanks, fit this in between Christmas and dinner. And
yeah. It's appreciated. Yeah. And noted.
Thanks for the eggnog, too.
No problem. half off at the grocery store yesterday. I'm kidding. Anyway, End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be a review of the year. A review of the year. Anyway.
Sorry, I didn't realize I was supposed to be making...
Yeah, you've been promoted to Ed McMahon.
Yeah. Can I be Paul Schaefer?
Can you play a piano?
Sure.
All right. we don't check credentials here. We do, as we do at the end of every year, we do our top five of the year, or what we think is the best movies that we saw in the last 12 months or so of doing the show. And I think it was a pretty good movie year. Any disagreement?
I think so, yeah.
I
had a tough time with my worst of list.
Oh, that's true. I still have some spots to fill in that worst of list.
you're just going to piggyback on what we said.
I certainly have one, and I haven't quite...
And you're still on the fence. You have one choice for the worst, and you're still on. Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to do our five. We're going to work backwards from five to one, and we're going to see... what happens and who's got what. So, Tim, why don't you kick us off with your number five?
All right. My number five is the only movie I have on my list from the World Wrestling Entertainment Production Company.
I'll believe it when I see it that it's the only one.
Only one this year. So I chose Fighting With My Family, directed by Stephen Merchant. I saw this back in June, so I've taken extensive notes since then to recall, but I remember it was a very entertaining movie. It's about WWE wrestler Paige, played by Florence
Pugh,
who went on to be in Midsommar, and she's also in Little Women that's coming out soon.
Yes.
She grows up in a family of wrestlers in England, and, of all places. Norwich, England, and it's a family of wrestlers, and it's based on a true story. Her mom and dad are both wrestlers. Her and her brother aspire to be wrestlers, and so her and her brother, through some fortuitous events, are able to try out for the WWE, and it's very interesting because the brother, his dreams are dashed, and Paige, whose real name is Sarah, ends up going on to the next stage. And I thought it was a really good, like, underdog story with a British bent to it. And then it's really good, like, fish out of water story, too, because she comes to USA. Vince Vaughn has a pretty good supporting role as her no-nonsense trainer. And she has to go through this process where you see all the superficiality that goes on. You know, she's at pool parties and she's not that comfortable.
Yeah.
She thinks about changing her look, and then she goes back to who she truly is. And I thought it had a really good message. And I thought the lead actor, Florence
Pugh
was really good. I thought she was amazing. And it's very interesting. And it's directed by Stephen Merchant, co-creator of The Office, British original version, and Extras. And he is one of the most hilarious performances in Extras as the incompetent agent, which is always makes me laugh. So I thought it was good. It was a really great mix of comedy and drama. And it's a really good underdog story.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard good things. And cool. You're number
right.
five.
Okay.
I have nothing to add.
Excellent. I also have nothing to add because I haven't seen it, but it sounds great.
Yeah.
So my number five is a film that I completely forgot came out this year. I thought for sure it was last year, but apparently not. So in a year full of comic book superhero movies, mm-hmm. there was one that
all of
was,
which you reviewed.
I know. Not all of which. That's not true, because I didn't see Avengers Endgame until I could watch it at home and pause whenever the heck I wanted to. So my number five is it's Shazam.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which was just... it was so... brilliant. And I don't mean brilliant in intelligence. I mean brilliant in, like, it was just bright. It was bright and, like, this shining, like, remember that comic books actually made you, like, feel good and feel powerful and feel connected to other people, and weren't these, like, giant tentpole films that, you know, ugh, it's just, yeah.
I remember talking on the Marriage Story review about Batman versus Superman and how you wanted to leave the theater wanting to cut yourself. I remember that.
It wasn't wasn't me. I didn't see Batman versus Superman.
God bless, yes.
Because I gave up on DC movies, but apparently not, because Shazam. Which I think actually Shazam was on my, like, most anticipated last year, so I'm glad. Like, it was just such a nice film. And
it all worked out for you.
Yeah, it was
come true.
I know, it was great. And it harkened back to Brandon Routh days of Superman,
mm-hmm.
you know, where the superhero is just kind of a big doofus.
Those days are still happening. He's Superman again on the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover.
Believe me, I know.
All right. But you're right. I mean, he did not get a fair shake, I don't mm-hmm. think, which is, it's too bad. Although, you know, he did recover nicely, landing as the Atom on the Arrow shows.
The longest running member of that particular League of Superheroes.
The Legends, you mean?
The Legends, yeah.
No, Mick and Sarah have been there from the beginning,
too. Oh, Mick and Sarah, yes, that's right.
They're the last two. Well, they'll be the last two standing. We're getting off topic.
We're totally getting off topic, but his character, I guess Sarah's character was also for a very long time on Arrow, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm. She was OG Black Canary.
Yep.
Okay.
Shazam!
And that's the DC universe.
Oh, yeah. All right. For my five, I chose two because it's not a real list until you cheat. So I chose two biopics because I couldn't choose between them. One is Stan and Ollie, and one is Dolomite Is My Name.
Mm. Good choices.
Yeah. Like, so Stan and Ollie, it's amazing how it stayed with me because I'm not like a Laurel and Hardy fan, but and it's not even like that impressive. Sounds kind of insulting. It's not that impressive a movie, but
yeah.
No. But it's like a really great double act. It's really and actually it's two double acts because it's also the actresses Shirley Henderson and Nina Arianda, who play the wives of Laurel and Hardy, and they're a really good double act too. And I think I remembered this saying this in the review that the movie actually goes up a notch when they come in
mm-hmm.
to see the two women and the men and how they pair off and how. The jokes and the humor change when the wives come into the picture too. It was so much fun, and John C. Reilly and Steve Coogan were so good together, and not just like being able to recreate the gags and the chemistry between the two, but I mean how that was used. Like there's a scene where they're like trying to get up a set of stairs to catch a train, which is not like taken directly from a Laurel and Hardy routine, but it's so Laurel and Hardy. Yeah. And then Dolomite, I mean, Eddie Murphy comeback vehicle. It's great. It's written by Larry Kazurski and Scott Alexander, who also did Ed Wood, who also did, I wrote down some of their stuff here. They did Man on the Moon. They did People versus Larry Flint. They did American Crime Story Versace. So these guys know.
So biopics are their thing.
They know biopics. And it was such much fun. Even like Keegan-Michael Key, there's a great scene. I think we played it on the review of the show where they're talking about the script for the Dolomite movie, and you know, Eddie Murphy as Ruby Moore is just like throwing out like ideas, like let's have an exorcism, and Keegan-Michael Key he's trying to do something more street, more about the black condition in America in the 70s. And then I don't think it can be said enough, Wesley Snipes is hilarious.
Yeah. as the pretentious sort of blaxploitation actor, director.
He is so freaking good and funny and so self-aware, and it's such a perfect role for him, and it makes me sad that it looks like he's not going to get any awards consideration, because I think he earned it.
Yeah. What I really liked about that movie is raunchy, but yet there's tenderness to it, and it's a really sweet movie.
Yeah.
And I thought the filmmaking was hilarious, because he'd never made a movie before. Right. He's just a stand-up comedian, and so he brings in Wesley Snipes' character, who's a blaxploitation actor, who's going to direct, and he acts like,
and that's how they get him, right? It's like, you want to be in a movie? Oh, you can direct too.
They don't even really know what that means, right? Yeah, it's pretty hilarious.
It's great. Yeah, it's so much fun. Well, we're seeing it easy to see because it's on Netflix. So
yeah, and Eddie Murphy is amazing in it. I think he deserves all awards that come his way for that.
Yeah, he probably didn't get. Unfortunately, Norbit, I think, kind of double tapped when he could have won for Dreamgirls, and maybe should have won for Dreamgirls. So maybe he could get some love for this. We'll see. Yeah. All right, let's go with number four.
Number four, I have The Lighthouse.
Ah, yes.
Directed by Robert Eggers. Shot in Nova Scotia in black and white. And it's a very interesting film. It's just...
Interesting's a good word.
Yeah, interesting. Some might say weird, but it's about two lighthouse keepers who slowly go mad in this remote lighthouse on this remote island. And the performances are amazing. I think Willem Dafoe is one of the best performances I've ever seen by him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that says a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a couple scenes, two in particular, where it's almost like Shakespearean, his soliloquies. One where he's just...
Yeah, that's right.
He's just unleashing on Robert Pattinson, who's probably career best as well in this. Mm. And he's just so sensitive for... Because Robert Pattinson's character, Winslow, has just put down his cooking. Mm. And he's like, oh, I don't like your cooking. And then Willem Dafoe takes it so seriously.
Yeah.
He goes on for, it must be like 2 or 3 minutes.
Oh, my God. That was like 3 pages of dialogue.
Wow.
Yeah. It was incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's another one where, Willem Dafoe's character is being buried alive by Robert Pattinson's character, and he just keeps talking.
Spoiler alert. I don't know. I've not seen the film. So.
There was still 20 minutes of movie, so it's okay.
It keeps going from there.
All right.
he doesn't die yet.
Yeah. No, I like The Lighthouse a lot. It made my top 10, not necessarily my top 5, speaking of spoilers. But I don't think he got the Golden Globe nomination, if I remember correctly, which makes me sad because I'd much rather see Willem Dafoe win playing the sea captain from The Simpsons than see Joaquin Phoenix win playing Insult Joker. So I'll just put that out there. All right, you're number four.
My number four is a film that probably should be higher because it's a great film, but I went with more fun films higher, but Booksmart.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, which is it was funny. It was heartwarming. It was like, oh, look, we can actually do anything. We can be anything. We can be both things. It's amazing. Yeah. Performances were like out of control.
Yeah.
Out of control, good. And outfits also. High, like jumpsuits. That's a thing again?
Yeah.
And well-worn.
Yeah. No, I love that. Also, one of the few high school movies where there's a scene where the kids go to the library to do research.
Yes.
It had this great like sort of like those old CSI montages as they're doing the science.
Yeah.
That was what they.
Yeah. The like geography on the...
right. Where it's like quick zooms around the table as they're like filling beakers, but that was a really I enjoyed that a lot. Again, that was the one that was probably on my top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make my top 5, but it was so much fun. It was immensely fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think it did get its due. I think it was pretty popular and a lot of people were talking about it, but it could have been bigger.
It should have been bigger.
Fell under the usual problem where people are like, Films about girls. Who wants to watch that?
I don't know if it was even that. Like, didn't it open the same weekend as Aladdin?
Oh, is that?
So I think it might have got buried.
Yeah.
Which is like, if it, you know, Good Boys, which was kind of the same thing except with 13-year-old boys. I mean, it could be the problems like, oh, a raunchy film about girls, heaven forbid. But
yeah,
I mean, that came out later in the summer and it was pretty good, you know, pretty successful. And maybe if they had done the same thing with Booksmart and maybe had tried that, I don't know. But I think you're also right. It's probably found a lot of new fans on home viewing. So
home video. Well, home box office.
They still call it home video.
I know, it's true.
You don't go to, anyway, you don't get a tape anymore, but that's what they still call it. It's a thing. My number four is also kind of in that fun mold, although there are some very serious parts. It's Wild Rose, which stars Jesse Buckley as a Glasgow mom who just got out of jail. I'm not sure what exactly she was in jail for. I think she was trying to, like, ferry drugs to someone in prison, although she didn't know it was drugs. But she does 12 month stint. She has two kids at home. She's a single mom, but she has big dreams of going to Nashville to be a country singer, not country and western, because a couple of people make that mistake in the film. But she has big dreams about being a country singer, and she struggles because, you know, she's got single mom. She doesn't have any, like, real skills. She's in Glasgow, which is, although I don't know if it's maybe a real place in Glasgow, that they have the Glasgow version of the Grand Old Opry.
I mean, it's possible.
It's possible.
Right?
I mean, that seemed like a kind of like a random thing to not to put in the movie if it wasn't really there. So, I mean, it could be a thing based on a real thing. But yeah, so she's trying to get out of her mold, and she finds a woman who's a bit more upper class. She works as a maid at the home, and she, you know, manages to get the mom and the kids on her side, and it looks like she's going to be on her way, and stuff happens along the way, and it's a lot of it's very heartbreaking. There's something to it there when it talks about, you know, chasing your dreams at the same time having to carry on your responsibilities, and can you do both? And the movie arrives at, like, a really, like, pragmatic place, but at the same time a really hopeful place. And Jesse Buckley is so effing good. I mean, just as an actress, but also as a singer, she's a really great performer. Like, the last song she does at the end, I can't remember the title, but it's like, you know, it's the Yellow Brick Road through Glasgow, and it's like, it's so mesmerizing at the end. And I'm not a country guy, but I've enjoyed country music, but it is such a great performance at the very end, and it makes me so sad that her next role is as Queen Victoria in Robert Downey Jr.'s Doolittle movie, which will surely bomb.
Yeah. Doolittle.
Yeah. That face Candace just made should be on every poster for Doolittle.
It's one of my top three most anticipated, though.
It just shy of top three for me.
Just shy of top three. That should be on the poster, too. All right. Speaking of top three, we are now in the top three.
Okay. So top three, a little repetitive, but Dolomite Is My Name is my number three. I
do enjoy Consensus.
Yes. Yeah.
Do as I say.
I did not say do as I say, but
I will watch the movie, though, because I haven't yet.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, and I just didn't get around to it. So I'm glad to hear it's so well reviewed around the table.
Good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And, like, just reiterate, Eddie Murphy's amazing as Rudy Ray Moore, and just so raunchy. And there's an excellent supporting performance by Divine Joy Randolph.
Yes. Yes, I'm glad you mentioned her.
As she's a comedian. She becomes a comedian as well. She's not really an aspiring comedian, but she's funny. And then he's like, you should take the stage and do some comedy. And she has a really funny act as well.
Yeah.
And she's involved in the movie. And it's a really funny scene in the movie within the movie, Dolomite, from 1975, where Eddie Murphy's character, because he's Rudy Ray Moore, and he's sort of a chubby guy, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't do the sex scene we're going to do. He's like all shy about it. He's like, I'm too chubby.
Yeah.
I'm not like Shaft. I can't do this stuff. And so Divine, her name in Lady, what's her name in the movie?
I can look it up.
Yeah,
while
but
you
she's...
talk.
She comes up with the idea, well, make it funny, you know?
Yeah.
So they have the bed collapsing on them while they're having sex, yeah. and they're like moving pictures around. And
well, it's more than that. Like, I think the whole, like, they have the set collapse.
Yeah, the set collapse.
it's so, the sex on screen is so good, though. The set virtually collapses.
Yeah,
she's Lady Reed.
Lady Reed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Divine J. Randolph, because I like that relationship. It's not like a romantic relationship, and that was like, is this where this is going? It's like he sees something in her, and that's a great thing about Moore, is like he was a mentor to a lot of people, where he brought a lot of people along. Mm-hmm. He was a great collaborator from what it seems like, and Lady Reed is a great example of that, where he sees her at a club, and I think she's like beating a cheating boyfriend.
She's beating him up, yeah.
And he's complimenting her. and they're having this conversation, and he realizes she's funny. And she's like, you should get out there, and like, you should do like me. Like, I just kind of started. And that was a great scene at the beginning with Snoop Dogg, isn't it? The Snoop Dogg's the DJ at the record store he works.
He's
always like putting on my comedy records.
it's the big club hit, my comedy record.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's funny. It's funny in film, because I've never seen Snoop Dogg look so haggard. He looks like tired, and it's like it's jarring. But yeah, that relationship too, and the way they kind of workshop the comedy together, it's a lot of fun. I'm glad you mentioned her.
Yeah, and the director Craig Brewer also did Hustle and Flow, which is
a
good movie from a while back. So
yeah,
hopefully he keeps it up, because this was really good.
Yeah, and another thing I'm glad is that this is like highlighting a great piece of Hollywood history that, you know, who heard of Dolemite until this movie, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Right now, maybe people will seek it out. And I mean, it also reminded me, too, of the Mario Van Peebles movie, Badass.
Yeah, about Sweetback's Badass Song.
Right, which was about his father. And I mean, that's the same period.
Oh, yeah.
And Wesley Snipes. I'll say Wesley Snipes again. Your number
three.
Wesley
Snipes.
All right. Wesley Snipes is not in this film.
Oh.
But my number three is Ready or Not.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Samara Weaving, right, is how you say her name, Samara. So she's, you know, marrying into this really rich family. It's
as you do.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, right? It starts with like, oh, I get it, you know, a little class struggle, a little like, oh my goodness, you know, she's taking this huge step. And then things go horribly awry.
As they do.
Yes, as many very rich family weddings do. But the film was just, I mean, it looked sort of fun, so I went to go see it, and it was just so well executed across the board. Like, it did exactly what it was trying to do really well. The pacing was great. The action was fun. The acting was great. And it was one of those things where the whole film really is about sort of class struggle, but it's in such a fun, ridiculous way that you don't feel like you've been beaten over the head with like, oh, and by the way, rich people are bad. Rich people come by their power in nefarious ways.
Yeah, it's not The Purge.
Yeah, no. yeah, and so it was a ridiculously fun movie that really surprised me that it was so good. I mean, I wouldn't say it's like at that sort of level of the like, oh,
it's not going to be an Oscar. Yeah.
Yeah. Where, you know, horror films now all have like serious messages and things like that. I mean, it wasn't even really a horror, despite the fact that there was so much blood. Like, so much blood. There is, in particular, some ridiculous amount of blood and viscera and great special effects in one particular scene. So, yeah. But yet, more of a thriller action movie than a horror.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. But blood.
oh, yeah. So much.
Come for the blood.
Come for the blood. Stay for the social message. Yeah. My number three is a little different. It is The Farewell. It is the Lulu Wang movie about a young woman who grew up in America. She goes back to China for her cousin's wedding. Wink. But it's really so that everyone can say goodbye to the matriarch grandmother who has been diagnosed with lung cancer, except according to Chinese tradition, nobody is going to tell her, and there is actually going to great pains to tell her that everything is fine. And so for this young woman, Billy, played by Awkwafina, it's, you know, she's grown up in America. She has no concept of this, you know, like stiff upper lip kind of lie to your dying grandmother kind of idea, or sees the value in that. And she's asking everyone throughout the film, it's like, shouldn't we tell her? And the answer is, you know, like the same. It's like, no, this is the way it's done. This is how we do it in Chinese culture. And so you see Billy actually struggle with that. And the hilarious thing is, first of all, the movie is hilarious. It sounds like a major downer, but it is so touching and so funny in so many different little ways. But the interesting thing about the film is that as you watch Billy struggle with it, and everyone's looking at her like she's the one that's going to break. If anyone's going to break, it is Billy, because she's the one voicing these dissenting opinions. The independent thought alarms are going off. But so as the people are looking at Billy, what you see is the other characters actually struggle with it too. And at the wedding scene, when the older Awkwafina's uncle gets up to talk, and he starts bawling. He just starts talking so sweetly and lovingly to his grandmother as he's crying. Not about the wedding of the cousin, but it's funny because Billy is the one they're worried about, but everyone else kind of has their turn breaking down. And there's a great coda in the end, because it turns out that the character that the Nana was based on is still alive 6 years later. So all this. But it does make me wonder. I mean, it's great to like look at different cultures and things and appreciate the differences. But, you know, I looked at this too, and I was thinking throughout the film, it's like, I'm not sure this is the worst way to do things. I'm not sure this is such you know what? If you want to spend like the last days of your life like not watching the sands of the hourglass run out, I think that's okay.
Yeah, I just wonder what happens when you inevitably actually start feeling unwell.
That's the thing. It's like, what happens when she gets like really sick, and it's like, oh, we'll tell her then.
Yeah,
it's just when you absolutely can't ignore it anymore, you get let in. It's like, oh, by the way, you're dying.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah, I don't know.
You're dying, but.
I think, yeah, there are pros and cons.
There are pros and cons.
But this is not a philosophy podcast.
No.
Maybe next year we'll do the philosophy podcast.
Philosophy of film.
Listen, I think I took that course.
We'll definitely need Peter back for that one. Although Big Daddy, Best of 99, that's all I'll say about Peter's choices. Anyway.
Yeah, that was...
He's not here to defend himself, so we'll move on. Why don't we play a little Christmas music, because it is Christmas, and then we'll come back with the last two of our top five of the year. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Yes.
Hey, stop.
Hugh Drysdale? Call me Ransom. It's my middle name. Only the help called me Hugh.
Okay. This is Trooper Wagner.
I'm Lieutenant Elliot. We just want to ask a few questions.
Excuse me. Sir? We're officers of the law.
You gonna run me in? I don't feel like talking. I'm distraught.
Hey, Benny, you want to ask this guy some questions?
Hi, what is this? What's this arrangement?
Mr. Drysdale.
CSI KFC?
And that was a clip from Knives Out. It is the new film from Rian Johnson. And it's been getting a lot of praise, including on this show. And I'll give it some praise, too. It's my number two
of the year. Interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
I think there's a mystery done to solve.
About it being the number two?
What is number one?
Well, we will see. But we'll come back around to me when I'll talk about it. But you go with your number two.
Okay. My number two is Marriage Story.
Oh, yes, Noam Baumbach. Yes, yes.
It was an excellent film, I thought. And it I was really surprised at how funny it was, although I've seen Noah Baumbach, and he tends to combine humor with tragedy. So it was very, very well done. It seemed very realistic, even though it's a very specific story. It's like one of those stories with the New York City theater director, the actress, you know. This isn't like our everyday lives, right? But he made it seem like it's every day, and because divorces happen every day and the damage is done every day. So I thought it was a very interesting movie. And I thought Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver were like fully committed to their roles.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they were amazing. And I also liked Laura Dern as the divorce lawyer.
Yes.
I thought she was excellent as well. And there's some good supporting roles too. Ray Liotta. It's funny. It's like, and it's, you know, it's probably so spot on. Like Ray Liotta is like the a-hole divorce lawyer who tells it like it is.
Yeah.
And then Alan Alda is the nice divorce lawyer
who
tells
Rogers
it like it is,
lawyer,
right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like they're both doing the same job, just to have a different manner about them, right?
I do love when he's dealing with Alan Alda, and Alan Alda keeps going like, the court is going to look at it this way. And Adam Driver says, I don't want to go to court. And he's like, no, I just say the court because we have to think about going to court. We're not going to go to court.
Yeah, he's got this like Mr. Rogers sheen about it. He's like, yeah, don't worry about that. Yeah, and then I thought, like, there's some really cool scenes. Like the scene with the evaluator where she's evaluating everything that Adam Driver's doing with his son.
Yeah.
And it's like, imagine being in that circumstance where your every movement's being watched. And he's like clowning around like he usually does with this knife. And then there's an accident and it's like, oh, I'm okay. I'm fine. There's nothing wrong.
That
there,
is right? Such a great scene with the knife. Yeah. Nothing bloody happens. Well, I mean, bloody stuff happens, but like nobody gets killed, fortunately, because it looked like it was definitely going that way. But it was, I like the humor in it a lot. It's not Kramer versus Kramer. It's like 2 hours of yelling at people. I mean,
There's quite a bit of that, but
there is quite a bit of that. But I mean, the humor helps when like the anger comes, and the anger really, really comes, and there's like one moment where you're just kind of where you're. The Adam Driver character says something where you just like look at the screen in shock, like, did he just say that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also telling. I mean, that's why it's called Marriage Story and not Divorce Story, because it really is telling a story about how these two people are have communicated with each other, and maybe the lack of communication they've had with each other. Mm-hmm. And you see that throughout the divorce process, that even as they're like breaking up, they're still trying to wear this veneer of, like, we're still good people, and we're still, you know, they haven't really been honest with each other throughout, it seems, through their entire marriage. Yeah. And it's heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you see both sides of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, once you start, like, siding with one, you find out
details
about what the other person did, right?
It was smart. And, nobody's innocent, but, you know, the movie does a really good job of selling it. And Laura Dern, she's so boss in that first scene.
Yeah.
In the first scene where she's like wearing, where she's just kind of like, she's dressed casually because she just came from her child's soccer game or something, but she's like wearing these like 4-inch red heels and just is like owning everything. And she's like, sorry, I look so schlubby. And it's like, Laura Dern schlubby is like my like class A dress uniform. It's
in your 4-inch pumps.
In my 4-inch pumps. That's right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You're number two.
Yeah. My number two is probably not actually a film that's good enough to be at number two.
Interesting.
But I know.
Big Daddy.
This is the thing.
Big Daddy Redux. Did that come out this year?
The director's cut.
Yeah. So, in actual fact, it's Us.
Yeah.
Which is a very good film, but in some ways, I really don't think that it is as good as, and I, you know, certainly haven't heard it yet on anybody else's list either. Mm. Unlike last year when we did our end of year, and it was like all Jordan Peele all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I do still think that even though I think the film wasn't as good certainly wasn't as good as Get Out and wasn't as good as maybe some other things this year, I think the fact that he tried something so different, mm-hmm. and so cerebral, and the fact that like the producers and production company and everybody were like, yes, we're going to put this out. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
But we're going to put it out anyways, and we're going to give it, you know, we're going to give it the big marketing. We're going to give it the, like, you know, everybody was behind it, which I think is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great that it's like, you know what, the film wasn't as good as it could have been or maybe should have been. It wasn't as good as his first one. But that doesn't mean that anybody has given up on him. It isn't like, oh, my God, that's a flop. Now all black directors can't direct.
Yeah.
You know, we are finally moving to a place where we're not going to judge the entire industry of one type of film or one, you know, women directors or black directors or like women-led films aren't going to be all judged by the performance of one film anymore. The film itself, though, was really good. Like it was, I mean, Lupita Long's performance.
Lupita Nyong'o.
Thank you. I can't. I need like cheat sheets. Either way, her performance was just like, oh my gosh, it was so good. And I mean, you felt for her at every moment in every role.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You could understand both sort of sides. You're like, oh, I know where you're coming from. You have actually, you know, without having to tell me expressly, you have built a whole like narrative that you've just acted, and I can understand where, you know, like everything has come from, which was just great.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the film, like, it was fun and scary and also pretty bloody.
I sense a theme.
And certainly left people really thinking about things and talking about things.
Yeah.
And the whole film was really a question mark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
what was it about?
Well, not only even what was it about, but sort of the question mark of like, oh, wait, was this like actually like a real place, or is this supposed to be a metaphor for our own like inner demons? What is that? And then when people start going down that path, then they start thinking about, who are we? Are we really split people? Are we...
Yeah. It's a movie about ideas, and people get hung up on the things like, where did they get the scissors from?
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't care about that stuff. Like, that's getting into the weed stuff. But, you know, there are just so many different ideas about what was going on. Like the scene where the underground family confronts the hero family, and they say like, well, where are you guys? You know, like, who are you? And the Lupita Nyong'o double says, we're Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, there's so much you can read into that.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's so great. And she had a really good year. I haven't seen it yet, but Little Monsters.
No, I haven't seen it either.
But like, the trailer is so great with, mm-hmm. like, she's basically like the romper room host, but she's like trying to hide the zombie apocalypse from the kids, with this upbeat, cheery attitude. And yeah, she is so great. And Winston Duke in that movie is a lot of fun.
Yep.
As you know, the big dumb dad and
the doofus dad,
and you know, because he's I first saw Winston Duke in Person of Interest. He was kind of like the big bad of season of four of Person of Interest, and so, you know, he's playing like a gang leader, a heavy, like the strong silent type. And then he was in Black Panther as one of the opposing tribes in Wakanda, and you know, so it was fun to see him in just like a fun role and to be the big goofy dad, and then the music in it too was like in the way it incorporated I Got Five on it,
mm-hmm.
and there's the fight scene at the end between the two Lupitas, which incorporates I've Got Five on it, and it's such a wonderful way. Like, there's just so much going on in that movie. I don't care that it doesn't make complete sense. Mm-hmm. And Get Out is such a, like a, it's so sharp in the way it was written and executed. Like, it's hard to, like, talk about.
To be left with questions after that. Like, it's clear what the message is.
Well, it's very, very clear, and it was very sharply delivered, and it was tight. It was like 90 minutes long, and that is as close you can get to perfection on your first movie out, that there's no way the second film was going to be able to compete, but it's us is a strong contender.
And it opens them up for ambiguity. I think there should be more movies that are open-ended and ask questions.
Yeah.
And it helps with repeat viewings too, right? Like right now this year we might be thinking, okay, it didn't make all the lists, but 10 years from now you might be going back to it because it's got those open-ended questions.
It's got the ingredients to be one of those movies for sure. Yeah. So as I said, my number two is Knives Out, and I think this lends itself to repeat viewing. To, you know, it's a mystery movie, so you can go back and see if the mystery made sense, although the mystery kind of resolves itself about that 40 minutes into the film.
I was super surprised by that. I was like, okay, but so where's the mystery?
Right. So, but I think that's what Rian Johnson is really good at. He knows, like, sort of the tropes and the standards of these kind of crime stories, these mystery movies, and he's able to subvert them. He did that with Brick, which is like a film noir. It is so great. It still stands up. And Brothers Bloom, which is like a kind of con artist movie, like The Sting. But, you know, the great thing about, and he does this in this movie too, with like just leaving little details there at the beginning that pay off big in the end. And he does that in Brothers Bloom, where there's a scene early on where the two brothers, played by Mark Ruffalo and Adrian Brody, are doing a con. And it involves one of them getting killed, and the comment is made that, you know, real blood dries and is colored brown. And you think, this is an unusual detail, but it's interesting. But then it pays off in the end in such a heartbreaking way. And it's the same thing in Knives Out. And I'm thinking particularly of the way the Jamie Lee Curtis character talks about how her and her father had a special way of communicating, and how that pays off in the end.
Yeah, it is true. It's the difference between Rian Johnson and another director who will forever be tied to him, J.J. Abrams. How different they are, where Rian Johnson introduces things and pays it off.
Yeah.
Like, he closes the loop on everything.
He closes the loop, like in Looper.
Yes, which was also a rather good film.
Yeah. Looper is better than I think people give it credit for. I think a lot of people get hung up on Joseph Gordon-Levitt pretending to be Bruce Willis.
Yeah, the weird, like, prosthetic nose, I guess.
Yeah. But,
did they do jawline too?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
No,
yeah,
no. There was,
he looked so weird.
There was prosthetic chins.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but the one thing I'll say about Looper, I think it's probably the last time Bruce Willis was awake during a movie. Anyway. But I liked Knives Out. I liked how Ana de Armas was the hero. I liked how it sort of reconfigured her for me, because I think you see a lot of the time she's cast as like a sex bomb, as the girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And here is like she has an undeniable sweetness, and that, and it really is capitalized in this movie.
Yeah.
And then to have her against Daniel Craig too, who is this goofy, just, you know, CSI KFC. But the thing I find interesting about his character is, like, is he a really good detective, or is he just like really good at, like, sitting back and letting stuff happen? And
is
then,
he Columbo?
Is he Columbo?
Or is he Sherlock?
Right. Yeah. That's it. That's it exactly. It was so great to watch. Like, when is he gonna do something?
Yeah.
That's what I loved about it. It's like she's doing all the legwork, and he's kind of reading the tea leaves back at home. But it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay, cool. So let's get into our number ones.
Okay. My number one Knives Out by Rian Johnson.
Yeah, I'm just going to spoil the surprise. My number one is Knives Out.
All right. Oh, we'll keep talking about Knives Out.
it was just brilliant. It was brilliant because I look back, like, when it first started, when I, like, first 5 minutes or so, I'm like, okay, is this going to be like Murder on the Orient Express?
Which I liked, actually.
Yeah, the movie from the 70s, I find it kind of overrated. It's kind of, like, stuffy, and, like, he brings so much energy to this movie, and the characters, and the snappy dialogue, and just, like, the twists and turns. and the camera movements, everything. It's just mm-hmm. such an, I thought it was such an amazing movie. And people will compare it to those old ones. I think it's the best one I've ever seen, like a murder mystery that I can think of right now. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, and I agree. It was sort of, I mean, I went in similarly thinking it was going to be a little bit of a, like, a slow boil, and we're all going, what's going on? Who's what? No, as you say, the mystery is kind of actually exposed pretty early on.
Yeah.
So then I was like, oh, well, now I'm just in for a ride, I guess, right? Yeah. Like, now it's just, now we're with them waiting to see when people are going to find out. I don't know. It was just so much fun. Performances were great, as you mm-hmm. say. Like, first of all, when was the last time you saw Don Johnson?
Watchmen. Also, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Who was he in?
Not the Zack Snyder TV show.
Okay, see, I haven't watched any of that.
He's in the middle of like a renaissance right now.
So what you're saying is that this year he's done three performances, and before that,
okay,
it's great. I mean, I think he was in a Western recently, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, it's funny. My wife just like a year ago asked me, "Where's Don Johnson?" Then we saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
He's been really busy, apparently.
And then we saw Knives Out. So it's like,
well, let me ask everybody this: where's Philip Michael Thomas? Nobody knows.
Is he still making music? Or?
I know. Like, could be performing, producing. I don't know.
Yeah. Where's Phil? Don Johnson's fine. He had Nash Bridges for 7.5 years whatever.
That was a while.
Phil Michael Thomas is on a boat somewhere.
Michael Shannon. I love Michael Shannon.
He's great, yeah.
Like, there are so many times that I finish watching a film, I'm like, oh, I just wanted more Michael Shannon, which is certainly the case in this, except that I kind of didn't at the same time because his character was so unlikable, which is so great. I'm like, oh. He was just a sweaty mess the whole time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I love the fact that Michael Shannon is like 100% okay. I mean, he's a tall, towering, strong, like physically imposing person playing this like weak.
And it leans into that too, because there's this scene where he confronts Ana de Armas. And you see him through the film. He's got a cane. And so he's like kind of walking around. And he's, you know... there's a typical mystery thing. It's like, you can't think this person is really that dangerous. But then there's a scene where he confronts her, and the way the sound design works with like the hard tap on the ground of his cane, and it turns very, very quickly. But he's good at that. He's able to play sort of, you know, aloof and standoffish, but he's also really imposing.
Yeah, that character is very interesting because it's so threatening in that scene. And earlier on, you're like, okay, this this guy. But he's just so hypocritical.
Yeah.
Actually, more so than a lot of the other characters. Because like the other ones, at least you know they're on this side sometimes. But with that character, it's like, oh, he's the one that's close to his dad. He took over the business, the publishing business.
Yeah.
But it turns out, no, he's just evil as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's all hypocritical. And you see that the way they treat the Ana de Armas character. It's like, oh, you're part of the family until they find out.
Well, not only that, I mean, she's part of the family, but then they each all individually say to her, you should have been at the funeral. I lost the vote.
Right.
Well, it's not, you can't have all lost the vote, obviously.
Yeah. Right. And every one of them gets wrong where she's from.
Yeah.
They all say a different country.
You don't know exactly where from in like Central America or South America she's from, because you get a different answer from everybody.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
she's just going about her business.
Yeah. And I mean, I do like the fact that they sort of brought in the typical, like, because it opened on American Thanksgiving. So they brought in the, like, American Thanksgiving, like, stressful conversation you have to have when the entire family is around, when one side of the family is Democrat and the other side of the family is a Republican.
Yeah.
And they sort, like, they did it in a way that as it was coming, I was like, okay, great. So we're actually going to make, like, a comment. Now I'm like, no, actually, he sort of didn't. He really just left it, like, this is just an experience you're all having right now. I have no comment on it except for the fact that it's an experience you're all having. Yeah.
I'm not sure I would agree with that, because I think that's kind of like the weakest part, like sort of making it explicit. I think it could have. I think the way they don't know where she's from, I think sort of makes that argument without having to bring you know whose name into it.
But, true.
Because I think that dates the film in a way that, you know, might weaken it. I mean, depending on how things go next year, but. It's
hopefully it does weaken it.
You think that somehow history will have forgotten this
I don't think people will forget him, but I think it will date the movie in a way. Because like some of those feelings are not going to go away. But I think it's a similar thing. I can't remember the name of what movie I'm thinking of off the top of my head, where there's like sort of an explicit Trump reference that just you don't need to go for the Trump explicit Trump reference. Implicit kind of works. And that leans nicely into my number one pick, which is not Knives Out because that was number two, but my number one is Parasite, the Bong Joon-ho movie, which actually deals with similar themes about, you know, the class struggle, you know, people on the margins, and how they struggle against, you know, people who, you know, have so much. And of course, the interesting thing in Parasite is I don't think anybody's really a bad guy. And Bong Joon-ho makes that pretty clear. It's a fascinating sort of three arc movie where he sort of changes the tone and the details with sort of as the story progresses, where you get a sort of very comedic sort of con artist family trying to work their way into this rich family's lives and trying to make themselves better and get into better jobs, get out of their lousy basement apartment. And then it goes into this like sort of thriller aspect, this very Hitchcockian aspect. And I was reading an article about this, and I was like, "Oh yeah, there is something about this that's very Hitchcock." And you definitely get into that in the middle section where the old housekeeper comes back, and some surprises are revealed in the house. Also, this is Knives Out, very much about setting, very much about like the houses. Mm-hmm. The house is a character. Because the house has to be arranged a certain way for this story to work. And then you get into it. Blood at the end. There's some significant bloodletting. It's all very well done. I think it's eminently rewatchable. The performances are great, especially Song Kang-ho, who's sort of the regular collaborator with Bong Joon-ho. He plays the father of the con artist family, the Kims, and like his slow burn of like just feeling like the negativity of how they look at him, how the rich family looks at him, and that slow burn it's really well done. But I mean, the whole cast is so great, and I think it's a message that translates. Yeah, it's subtitled, it's in Korean. But this is a story that could happen in Toronto. It's a story that could happen in San Francisco. It's a story that could happen in London. Anywhere where there's like such disparate inequality. And it is such so well executed. It's not fancy. It's just really, really competent and really, really well executed. And I can't say enough about Parasite. It's back at the bookshelf in January.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to. It's one I wanted to see and then just missed. I just don't get out to see as many movies as I should. But yeah, that one's definitely on the list of ones that I was looking forward to seeing. So
yes,
I haven't seen it either, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, so yeah, it's back at the bookshelf in January, and I would encourage everyone to see it. And I think it was a full house the night I went. It was like the Friday it opened at the bookshelf back in November. Yes. So I think our lists prove this was a really great year for movies, and like a lot of different movies, because I wrote down a few that I'll mention that weren't on the list but could have made the list, like Hustlers, which was so much fun. Also, another message about inequality.
That was happening a lot this year.
So, I mean, yeah, so it was topical, and Lighthouse could have made my list, too. Although it technically came out last year, it's a movie I haven't been able to stop thinking about since I saw it in February at the bookshelf, which is If Beale Street Could Talk, which is so lyrical and so melancholic. It's such a beautiful film. It's on Amazon Prime, so it's easy to find, too. So really good year in movies.
Yeah, The Irishman was pretty good, too. It didn't make my top five, I thought it was... It was his, actually, in a way, it was his most mature, like, gangster movie, because it just showed, like,
the
tragic downfall that's going to happen if you have this life
in sort of a
real-world way, as opposed to the glorification that you get from, like, Goodfellas and stuff.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that movie, but probably be my top 10, not my top 5, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there were just a number of films that were better than they should have been, like Crawl and Child's Play.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just, you know, things that were, I went to totally anticipating, like, ugh, this is just going to be like a ridiculous, stupid, cheesy thing. And I was like, oh, that was really good, actually. That's mm-hmm. surprising. Mm-hmm. I sadly have so little time for film that I just see the big, like, I'm very franchise and
yeah.
Yeah. That's it, unfortunately, for me.
It's tough to have a lot of time to see.
I know. Thank goodness for the, home streaming market. It's what I do on Sunday afternoons.
All right. Well, let's get back to our Christmas festivities then and call that a day for the show. And if you'd like to listen to the show again, you can certainly find us at our website at endcreditsradioshow.com. And you can find this episode again there. You can download it from the Politicast channel every Friday at Podbean or through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We're on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show or on Twitter at End Credits Radio. And where can people find you guys on the internet?
You can find me on the internet everywhere at Cinn48, that's CINN48. Just, you know, Google me.
Yes, same for me, Flash in the Deadpan. Find me there, and Merry Christmas, everyone. And
ho, ho, ho.
Happy New Year.
See you in the new year.
Well, we'll definitely see people in the new year. Next week, we'll have our worst of the year, plus our most anticipated for 2020. I'll be back on CFRU tomorrow at 5 p.m. for News and Politics with Open Source's Guelph and Scotty Hertz. In the meantime, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to GuelphPolitico.ca. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we'll be back New Year's Day for more end credits, and we'll see you then.